We will jam with you. Boom, boom.
That was great. Keep in mind, I had to highly advocate for the jingle to continue. And so big thanks to Davey for coming up with another amazing jingle to start off this.
Yeah, welcome to the Design System Office Hours podcast. This is episode 9. We're recording this today on a Wednesday afternoon, and looking to talk to you, PJ, about ROI, return on investment.
Yes. The topic that a lot of folks are banging their head against as a design systems.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this, just prepping ourselves for this conversation. And I was expressing to you, PJ, that one very, I think, simple way that most people should start looking at this is that design systems creates efficiencies in terms of either code reuse, which is something that is very, very extremely easy to sell to your engineering team, but also Figma component and template reuse and aligning on the idea of building in a reusable fashion and allowing designers to work faster and move faster. So we at Disney Streaming have thought about those in the two very simple fashions and tried to get alignment on those two as soon as possible. But I'd like to hear about how else we could quantify and improve on explaining ROI.
Yeah. And I was, funny enough, I was laughing because I was saying, geez, they just said, sweet, awesome. Here's your budget. That would be amazing. And I think that the challenge I've run up against is that's not always been my experience, that there's an understanding in the theoretical sense that a design system will save engineers and designers time. But the big question is how much? Specifically because, all right, you're asking for X engineers, but how can you guarantee that the aggregate hours of X engineers is going to be less than the efficiencies that you affect within the larger engineering and design org? And that's where it can get a little bit tricky, right? Because you're trying to estimate something that doesn't exist yet. And so I don't know. You can guess, but that's where I think some of the trickiness and the art, as opposed to the science of measuring ROI before a system exists, affect within the larger engineering and design org. And that's where it can get a little bit tricky, right? Because you're trying to estimate something that doesn't exist yet.
I think that's a difficult one. One that I think I may have brought up to you on here is, theoretical example, right? And maybe you all went through this at Pinterest, but imagine with the absence of design tokens, if you wanted to change your primary like Pinterest red color, what would the cost of that be?
Yeah. And so, you know, one thing we did in the past is we used past examples, of situations like that, not where we changed the red, but similar examples where we had to change a visual attribute across three platforms. And tried to measure just the human effort it took to do that. And then try to estimate what we thought it could take with systems. Again, that's the challenge, right? If it don't exist, you can't really measure it. Therefore, you can't directly compare it. But that was one of our main efforts, was to try to isolate key situations where a design system would have been lovely to have. And the friction that we felt by not having it at that point. Again, though, not to sound like a broken record, the follow-up question is typically, okay, but how much is a design system going to help you or going to help us in these situations? And is the value of the design system worth the investment that you're asking for? Or is it still more cost effective just to deal with that pain when it comes? And that's always been the challenge from my perspective, is how you objectively show that it's worth investing the money in systems as opposed to somewhere else.
Yeah, I love that red example, or the button example, because that was one of my first forays into design systems was at Goodreads, we were looking to, at that point, we called it, you know, a visual style guide, right? So we were looking to build a visual style guide, and we were looking to refactor a button and make it a React button that worked across web and mobile web. So that audit illustrated that we had dozens of different, you know, primary beige colors. We had different colors that represented the parts of the gradient. At that time, the button was a gradient button. And the thought experiment was, what would it take to update this button to a solid color? So let's say that we wanted it to be like a solid, you know, brown color. How many instances of this button exist in the code? And it was, I would say a little bit alarming. And the longer, obviously, the more mature of a product that you have and you stood up, and as you come across buttons that you may have, engineers may have designed, 5 years ago, this number could be dozens. Like, dozens of these instances could occur. And a button, I think, is a good example because it's a foundational component that could be refactored. Obviously, there's upfront costs and with a lot of the stuff with auditing what you have, looking into the code base, working with engineering on that, and trying to figure out how to build this component to be flexible, across breakpoints, and then you're done with it, and then it's a clean slate that you could kind of build upon, and then as you a nod to our previous episode, multi-brand design systems. If you needed to support an additional brand or maybe like a business design system, you could use this foundational component to riff off from there.
You know, the interesting thing for me when trying to tell us, like try to make the case for return on investment, is that to this point, if your system's relatively new, if you don't have a lot of adoption, it ultimately there is going to be a bit of a leap of faith, like a blind leap that you're the case that you're making, because you don't have those numbers in place. And so you have to try to connect the dots, and you have to guess, make educated guesses. Typically what I've done in the past is I've talked with engineers, I've talked with designers, I've tried to get like a heuristic sense of how much time we think we can save based off of their direct experience, and then try to extract that out across an organization and hope to God that the numbers pan out in terms of return on investment. But even that is still, it's fuzzy. It's fuzzy math. And that's the challenge that I've run up against. It sounds like that wasn't as much of an issue at Disney Streaming during your tenure.
I think there was a very easy upfront investment onto like the lowercase design system early on. So there was very good buy-in to build off of these foundational components. Whether our seven client engineering teams had done coded components that match that, I think that's a different story, but it laid the foundation for this, V1, lowercase design system. The harder part about this, I think for us was like, much like I think many other product teams, you try to shoehorn what you can when you see project opportunities pop up. So Star Plus, for example, we knew was going to be an opportunity to roll out design tokens and, this multi-theme approach. So we took a step back and worked on this foundational layer upfront, and, that ended up working out in our favor because we were able to establish that need. But PJ, what if theoretically, like you said, we are in a new startup that is hyper growth, and we're trying to sell this idea that this thing is going to pay dividends. And how would we sell that? What are some sort of key talking points that you would suggest to design leadership?
The first thing I would do is understand the leadership's love language. Is it money? Is it velocity? Is it product quality? Whatever is the thing that leadership is indexing on, you focus your value based off of that, and try to keep it as simple as possible. Because realistically, a design system can address all those things. And so if there is one specific thing that leadership wants to see out of their product, I would really focus in on that, that the design system can help move that at scale. And then the second thing that I would suggest, if you're having challenges, is, you know, with getting buy-in, it's just be a rampant opportunist, meaning you may have a plan in place, but if something comes up where you can help prove out that return on investment, help prove out the value, you do that and you drop what you need to do in order to do that. And that can be tough, because everyone, you know, most people like a plan and most people like to know what they're doing tomorrow. The challenge is that if you are fighting for your life, there is no tomorrow, and you really have to focus in and move towards the areas of greatest opportunity to prove your value at every millisecond of your day. And we did that a lot, where, you know, we had an idea of what we were going to do, and then something popped up and we switched it up because it helped us prove out that value. And then you hope that you succeed, and then you chirp about it as much as humanly possible and let everybody know at every minute of the day that this happened, and it happened because of design systems. And it, you know, it can get a little annoying, but when you are trying to make the case, you have to repeat yourself, you have to stick to the script, you have to show that value at every moment you have.
Yeah. On the note about, if I was a design leader, or, you know, a product leader, engineering leader, and I was thinking about, the financial aspect of this, right? Looking back, let's see, 2018, four years ago, right? When we were developing Dizzy Plus, there was really only three of us that were, primarily designing in this fashion. We were designing, building components. We haven't yet reached, templates yet. We were still building a lot of pages, but we were building in this reusable form. And what I thought we needed then, and I wasn't in that position in my career, was we needed someone to be the driver, and that person, like you said, that would elevate this practice and be working with engineers and working with designers to adopt this new way of working, because the ROI in design systems isn't only about code or cost savings, but it's there's a relationship portion of this as well, and it's about building the community and supporting the rest of us. And I think when you build that community through office hours, that's why this podcast is called Office Hours too. You become a trusted leader, and you become someone that you become a voice in the organization that people would love to elicit your feedback on how might we do this thing a little better, or how might the design system help me go to market on this when we've had a month cut off of the timeline.
Yeah, I think that is one of those more squishy, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but a squishy value that, you know, there's a lot of teams that are really honed in on what their feature is, what their team is working on. And that can sometimes lead to misalignments, to people doing the same stuff, but differently. And I think that's another value of a well-funded design systems team, that, hey, we've got a full view of what everyone's working on, and we can start to connect the dots. That's literally our job, is to connect the dots. And we can start to understand how not only can we make the system better for our design org, for our engineering org, but we can also see what everyone's working on, just due to what we're supposed to be doing on a daily basis to help people avoid doing stuff they don't have to. So that's the other, it's hard to measure that. It's that and many other squishy things that I think bring the more, qualitative value of systems to a company.
Yeah, you start to see, so this is our eighth episode, and you start to see ROI manifesting itself in our previous episodes, right? So if you do this in the fashion that is to the best of scale, and you could impact multi-brand design systems. If you utilize a design technologist, you could get greater return on ROI in prototyping or inside your design tool. So there's a lot of excitement, like, about us being accelerants, right? Us enabling designers or enabling engineers to work better. One thing that might be the trickier one to sell. So we've talked about how to sell this to design, how to sell this to engineering. How might you sell the ROI to a product manager?
Oh man, to me, that's the easy one. As an ex-product manager, you know, so you're telling me that I can ship my feature faster? So you're saying that I have to write less functional requirements for how this works? Just use the component? Like, I think there's a lot of product value. To me, that was a no-brainer. And maybe that's why I haven't really spent a lot of time, and that's my own failing, talking with product, because to me, that's the ideal outcome, where if someone's just focusing on business outcomes, and what you're saying is, hey, you can go to market at a significantly reduced cost in terms of time and just overall product development. That seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know. Have you had a different experience?
As most of my experience of working deeply with product was prior to us launching the application. So we had to write requirements for everything, whether the pattern was new or whether the pattern existed, you know, out in the wild or not. So when I was working more on the feature team, there's a lot more interest in doing, even if the components could have been shared, there's product owners that would want to create something novel. And, you know, obviously designers love creating stuff that's novel, because we would love to, you know, put our signature, you know, on the bottom and, you know, dribble this, dribble that.
dribble that.
But that's expensive. It's expensive.
Yeah. I mean, that's the tough thing, right? You know, are we here? A rhetorical question. Are we here to make things, you know, to leave our mark? Or are we here to help business outcomes? And I would, depending on who you ask, I bet you the CEO would say you're here to help. At the end of the day, you're here to help business outcomes. That doesn't mean that we want to crush any sort of expression, mind you, but I think we have to be strategic about when to use that expression, when's the right time, how's the right time to utilize it. And typically, you know, a text input probably isn't your best opportunity for creative expression. And so it's finding that middle ground. But the other argument I would make is that if you reduce your design time by 30 or 40%, because you're not recreating the baseline, that gives you 30 or 40% to focus on big gnarly challenges that you just wouldn't have had time for, you know, where you're polishing pixels. So how can we advocate for designers to focus on the more ambiguous strategic challenges from a design side, and then feel that by not having to focus on those little details, that's empowerment as opposed to taking away one's creative freedom.
Yeah, Pinterest, understanding that you all do a bit of experimentation, how would you sell, you know, utilizing the system as a starting point when you're running an experiment, you know, a multivariate experiment?
That's a good, we're funny enough, we're working on that right now. I think, you know, you can pump out a lot of variants really fast if you're using the system. More from an experiential standpoint, less so from a visual standpoint, if you want to, you know, tweak the visual style of our system. But yeah, from an experience level, man, you can crank those things out fast. How fast? Well, that's funny enough. If I could do it over again in terms of proving out ROI, what I would have loved to have done is actually get two or three teams, cross-functional teams, to build out a surface with our design system and without our design system, and just measure the time and have a large enough of a sample size where it's no longer theoretical. But hey, there's Pinterest designers, Pinterest engineers building Pinterest surfaces with a Pinterest design system. Here's the difference in time. That's about as concrete as it gets. But it's we weren't able to do that, or I didn't think of it. But I do think it would be substantial. And from an experimentation standpoint, I think, geez, orders of magnitude faster, most likely. And
a good learning opportunity was in 2018, when we were working through Dizzy Plus, and we had at that time handed off, the large portion of the content discovery screens. Come to find, we did not do a good enough job with making sure our text was AA, color contrast accessible. And what had happened was when we had QA'd a lot of the typography and the colors, we were merely QAing the sizing of type, for instance. So we were QAing this is Avenir 16 pixels. Cool. Okay, move on. We didn't necessarily at that time make sure that everything was linked to a style. So there was really a two-step process to ensure that this snafu would not happen again. And I think it was a very big upfront cost, like a multi-day effort, I would say, to make sure all the text was linked to the right styles. All the text were mapped to the old color that was not accessible. Then we had to flip it to a color at the, that was accessible at a later date. And it was one of those things where it allowed us, with that upfront work that was had been done, to promote that anything that comes in and out of the system will now be AA accessible. So it's from like a time saving standpoint, and something that designers should be aware of, but something that they don't necessarily need to worry about when they use a component that is from the system.
Yeah, we luckily have gotten tokens into our web code base. And it was funny because we were just having a conversation about dark mode and about a certain treatment. We were starting to waffle on whether it was the right thing, or at least a conversation started. And man, if before tokens, this would have been like an existential crisis, because there'd be like no way to get those things out. It'd be impossible. And with tokens, it was just sure. Let's give it a shot. No big deal. We can switch them out. They're just hex values. And just that alone, in terms of saving just mental anguish, I think is return on investment from my point of view, because it just gives you a level of agility to not have to get it perfect with a capital P right out the chute. And if you got to change things, it's no sweat. You're not killing some engineer that has to go through, comb through the code base and make changes. Just that level of agility is worth it. But that's also hard to express to executive leadership at times. It's kind of like in some ways, it's kind of like insurance. No one enjoys paying for insurance until you get hit, and it's not your fault. And now you got to buy a new car. And then all of a sudden, insurance feels pretty awesome, right?
It seems like a logical idea,
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think folks are getting it, but I still think it's good to be able to know how to tell, how to make the case for ROI inside and out, where, like an ad hoc meeting comes up and you can speak to it, with your eyes closed and like it's the back, what's that saying? For like the back of your hand, whatever. You can say it whenever you want, and you can speak articulately about how you plan to and already are returning on investment.
Hey, here's a good one. I think as design manager to product owner, being able to see everything that we're working on, right? If you're looking to grow your team and you're looking to, let's say you have the headcount, or maybe you don't have the headcount. And in my case, I had the headcount, but I was trying to prioritize getting help and recruiting help, and then getting panels spun up. How might you elevate the ROI of this specific person that's going to come on your team? How can you sell that idea that with this person, if we could get this person in the first half, we're going to be able to onboard them. And then in the second half, we're going to be able to do bam, bam, bam. Is that the sort of tactic that you would take?
Yeah, that's what I've done in the past, where I've said, hey, if we get this person, they're going to work on these things. We estimate that this will improve engineering efficiency by X%. They'll, Y engineers are on, will be using this. That equates to, you know, X times Y hours. Hopefully X times Y hours is more or equals more than what the hire is. So you're hoping for more than 40 hours a week of savings. And then you can say, hey, look, you're in the black. You hire this person and you get more in return from it. I was jokingly telling a coworker that I'm just an accountant now, where I just calculate that this is a net positive in terms of return from cost. And then we decide to do it super fun. But no, I mean, I think it's really important right now, to be able to prove out everything that we're doing and justify it. Why are you doing this versus that? These are fair questions to be asking. And if you don't have an answer, like, I don't know, because we thought it was awesome, that's obviously going to raise some eyebrows and maybe give someone a little bit of pause to invest more.
Yeah, PJ, you're what we'll call a bean counter.
I count beans. I was wanting to get one of those like little abacus, one of those, you know what I'm abacus. That's all wrong. I'm the accountant here. I should know what that is.
I'll give you one. I'll give you an abacus.
Oh, or, I would love one. Thank you.
Or maybe one of those, they have those machines that count like gems or,
I'm not at that level yet. I'm gemless. I don't have a single gem.
You're counting your tasks. Oh, there's 10,000 gems that I've counted today. So there's an interesting angle that I've found too. If you have a good foundation and you have, a good starting point with your components, then you could also, as a product owner or a manager, be able to figure out when to spike for help. I'm a big advocate of not throwing people at the problem. So that's something that some of our leadership teams have done in the past. I think you could elicit help for spikes, but I don't believe in hiring just for the sake of hiring or hiring just to throw people at a problem, because you do need to, you know, at some point as a design manager, care for the career of those people that you hire, right? So the design system ROI does also pay some pretty good dividends when you do elicit help from contractors for specific spikes, like you need to build out a component. This needs to be done in this half. This is the starting point. Let's get some contract help to either build this from like a design point of view or from an engineering point of view. It does help speed that up quite a bit. And there's enough to usually, I would say, for the designer or the engineer to work off of that. They're not starting from, you know, square one.
Yeah, that's, I mean, throwing people at the problem is scary, right? Because what if that problem goes away? Now what the hell do you do? If it's a short-term problem, and you've surged your hiring to solve that short-term problem, it creates a weird dynamic, you know, like, are there other spots for them? What do you do now? So yeah, if it is short-term, if you can throw silicon at the problem and try to, you know, invest in tooling or invest in some form of automation, or resources like a design system, that would be ideal. And maybe there's a little bit more short-term pain until you spin up the system, but long-term you're typically going to net positive from that type of approach, at least from my experience.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned the word. I was trying to figure out the word, to segue into, but automation and, really trying to, you know, simplify the flow of how we work, as design system folks. And one thing that our design technologist, Lee Nelson, had said is he had asked whether the thing that we wanted him to make a plugin for, he asked just straight up, how many clicks are we going to be saving the designer? Is it going to save them 4 clicks or is it going to save them 15 clicks? If it saves them 15 clicks, and which might represent you clicking, opening a new tab window, you know, authing SSO, then it might be meaningful. But if it's really just maybe you just have to click, open a tab, search for something, download, pull it into Figma, it may not be the greatest ROI in terms of you know, building a custom plugin. So I love the different ways that we're looking on resourcing and looking on how to, you know, scale ourselves more effectively.
How do you measure that? How do you, I mean, do you just run through like quick usability, like quick research sessions where you try to get an assessment of how much time you can save?
I think that's probably the best, easy back of the napkin thing to do. We've run demos on how might we spin up like a design template or like a screen with said Figma component, and we would time it, or we would challenge ourselves to, you know, record it or give a demo of it. And if I could say that I could build most things within, you know, a few minutes, like that's pretty powerful. And it's not saying I could build most things and get real data in there. That's like an additional layer, but that is also like that is an ROI question. Like, is it meaningful to get the real data in there? And it's that squishy, you know, it depends, right?
Totally. It's tough, right? Like it's still like, it's a bet. If the thing don't exist, you're making a bet at the end of the day. You can make a really informed bet, but it's still a bet. And that can be tricky. You know, that can be also a tough conversation to have with leadership if they want super objective evidence, because you probably don't have it. You have industry examples, which is helpful. You definitely have things you can pull from other teams, but that can be an awkward conversation at times.
Perhaps possibly, like cumulative hours saved. I've seen that, we've tried in the past to utilize, like, oh, we've saved such and such story points, but, sometimes design leadership doesn't give a shit what sort of story points or t-shirt sizes that you have, you know? Yeah. But if you say that we've saved cumulatively like 90 hours in design and engineering time, that's like, shit, that's a lot of money.
That's the other thing. Yeah. Measuring velocity. That is a hard, hard thing to do to any level of accuracy. What is a story point? Does everyone point it the same way? You know, it's tough. And that's where there's just layers and layers of squishiness to this topic. And in some regards, just kind of give it a big old hug, embrace it, and do your best to make the case with it.
Yeah. That's like, how much ice cream do you like to eat, PJ?
You should ask my daughters that. And they'll say all of it.
That's a story point question. That's So they're on the 8-pointer, possibly just on the 1-pointer. So velocity, I think, is a great topic for a future episode. You know, we always find our topics as we, you know, talk the problems through. We've hit the 35-minute point on this timer. So, you know, thank you so much, PJ. It's another spirited discussion on ROI.
ROI.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.